Kitty. Okay, is that my fault? Oh, yeah. All right, you got me now? Greg Kokel here, Stand to Reason. Sorry about that little delay. We're working with a new system here because, as you know, these are weird times. These are the times that try men's souls, and in order to be balanced, women's souls as well. And I thought maybe I'd take a moment to bring you up to date on things that are happening. This is the first time that I am not doing our show in our studio. I'm actually doing it at home, which is why we had a little hiccup there a few moments ago, working out the details. I guess this is a good thing because if we learn to do this remotely like I'm doing now, that means I could broadcast from anywhere that I get a broadband signal. So if I want to go fishing for a few weeks, I can maybe not have to skip a show. We'll see how that works out. I'm not sure if that's such a good idea now that I think about it, because sometimes me having a break is good for me. But in any event, I feel like I'm in the matrix a little bit right now, doing all the digital stuff here. But part of what I want to affirm is that we're still doing our job. And at Stand to Reason, our duties, in many ways, what we do as an organization can qualify, according to the governor of our state, California, as essential kinds of duties. That gives us some latitude. But at the same time, though, we are still scaling back, just like pretty much everybody else has. That's why I'm here. I'm not in the office because I'm almost 70 years old. That means I'm old enough to be at risk, although I'm in really good health, other than kind of some structural things that isn't related or that aren't related to the concerns we have with the virus. But in any event, so I'm at home just to be safe, and pretty much everybody else is at home. We have one person in the office more or less at a time. But here's the good news. We have learned how to continue to do what we need to do in spite of these restrictions. So in a certain sense, it's business as usual. It's awkward, somewhat inconvenient, but we have been consistently productive, though, for your sake. We want to be here for you. And we know a lot of people are staying home, and some are doing work at home, and that's great. And spending time with their families, et cetera, et cetera. There's an upside and there's a downside to that. Some of you may be learning that, who kind of get an 8 to 10 hour break every day during the week from family things. Now we're facing a little different circumstance, and that has its own challenges. Some of you are in a situation where you can't take your work home, and you are high and dry for a while. For how long, we don't know. Something we're praying about, trusting that God will help our leaders have wisdom regarding. But with regard to Stand to Reason, we are not impeded in our work. We're doing our show. We're doing SDR Ask. We are fulfilling orders. We're working on our website and doing our blogs. And actually, we're stepping up things because we know that there are things that you're facing now as a family member that and as a worker, where you just maybe have a lot of extra time and time to do things you weren't able to do before. So we want to either be an encouragement to you with new challenges that you're facing, or provide some things in your free time that you might not have been able to get to. You know, I mentioned this, was it last week or not sure when I mentioned it, but it seems either it's something I sent out to all of you or on the air. You know, we have some products like the Bible Fast Forward. That's 8 sessions, 50 minutes each, taking you from Genesis into the Gospels, showing how the entire thing ties together in a very unique and intimate kind of fashion, intimate theologically. And I follow the history of the nation of Israel, principally the 12 major events, starting with the call of Abraham in Genesis 12. And that's the kickoff. That's the kickoff of the rescue plan. That's the kickoff of the nation of Israel. That's the kickoff of everything else that follows. And that's why that passage is arguably the most important passage, or one of the most important passages in all of Scripture. But some of you might be thinking, boy, I'd like to do that someday. Well, maybe now's the time to do it. We have it on video. We have it on audio. We probably have it on MP3. You can download it. Can't listen to it while you're driving to work. But you can when you're sitting at home with your family or otherwise occupied by other things that you wouldn't be doing right now if you were at work. So there's some thoughts. Anyway, we're trying to do some things Facebook Live things and some other things that are just going to be helpful to you. We want you to know that we're here for you. One thing that we talked about as our virtual staff meeting today is that is asking this question, and I'm just going to encourage you to think about it. What does this time make possible for you that would not have been possible otherwise? What does this time make possible for you that would not have been possible otherwise? I know, for example, I've got, since I'm grounded, I got lots of writing stuff that I'm catching up on or working at catching up on. So that's one way that I'm directing my efforts. I have things around the home that I needed to get done that, since I'm out of town a lot, I haven't been able to address. Those are things that, in a balanced way, once I've finished my work, I can give attention to as well. So I have my own punch list, personally and professionally, that's going to help me through this time, however long it is. But I've thought about something, and I sent out a video today that we sent out just as encouragement to people. Many of you listening have already seen it. But there's a passage in Proverbs that instructs me at times like this. And it is, the hand of the diligent shall rule, or the precious possession of a man is diligence. In fact, there are quite a few proverbs that talk about that. Diligence, that means being productive. Not always necessarily in something meaningful. Sometimes you're just being productive in something that's fun, something that's self-satisfying, something that means something to you as an individual, because it's a personal goal doing something you like. So I'm going to be spending more time in my shop. Okay. But I'm getting something done. I'm organizing something or cleaning something up or building something for the home or whatever. Partly because I like to be productive. It's good to veg sometimes, but I think the temptation for some people in a circumstance like this is that you just veg out completely. You become a couch potato, nothing to do, really bummed out. I'm not going to work, or maybe I'm out of work. This is not a good recipe for fulfilling time. Rather, I encourage you to try to figure out something that you can do consistently. Order your day, plan your day, work your plan kind of thing, or plan your work your plan, I guess is the way it goes. Just keep yourself moving forward so that you're feeling satisfied about doing something productive, whatever that happens to be. All right. So that's my kind of practical advice during this time. Now, I had said once before in one of my missives that this is a great time, probably for families, because you can spend more time with your families and do things like that. But not everybody has a family. We had someone dropped us a note and said, by the way, I'm single and I'm by myself. And so maybe there's a silver lining in this downtime for lots of people with families they get along with. But for those people who don't have families, this is like a sort of solitary confinement. And so what about us? And so I had to ask myself the question, what would I do if I was in that circumstance? I'm not. I was for a long time, single for a long time, though not isolated. But my idea at the time was I, being single, not satisfied with being single. I didn't get married till actually I had my 48th birthday on my honeymoon, so we figure it out. I waited a long time. A couple of reasons for that. But on my way of thinking, though, even though I was dissatisfied in that regard as a single person, I wasn't going to let that define my life. And therefore, I had set goals for myself that were satisfying for me, even though I did not have the companionship of a spouse or a family. Now, that was a long time ago. That was almost 22 years ago. But I think something similar may be applicable here. I'm not in that situation, but if I were and I was by myself, I think I'd be doing the same kind of things. I'd be making a punch list. I'd be thinking about, by the way, who, if I'm more sociable, who could I connect with through Skype or through Zoom or some visual aid digitally through technology? That's a way out. Maybe people you haven't seen for a long time. Maybe people you haven't talked to in a long time in other cities or maybe even other countries. This is all possible to do now. If you're in a situation like that where you're an individual, you don't have family around you, and you're just twiddling your thumbs, feeling lonely, not sure what to do. Okay, so there's one possibility. Actually, that's a good possibility. Even if you got friends around, you can still reconnect with those people that you haven't connected with in a long time. But for me, the punch list is really important. If I feel like I'm being active and I'm doing something where I'm making progress, I feel good. Doesn't mean I can't have downtime, watch a movie with my family, order out pizza or El Pollo Loco or something like that, whatever your favorite happens to be. But I can have downtime. But in this circumstance, the downtime, I think, for a lot of people is threatening. It's hard for you. Makes you feel not so valuable, I guess, for some. It's, I heard somewhere that people who retire, many of them, even though they're reasonably healthy, oftentimes die very soon after that because they don't have anything meaningful to live for. They're suffering during a period of inactivity and they don't know what to do. That's the kind of situation I'm talking about now. Get up and do something. Don't be a couch potato. That would be the best advice, too. I'm going to offer one other thought here before we go to break. And it's been something I have been thinking about for a while. And I'm thinking about talking about on the air a different perspective in, let's see, this is April, March to April to May to June. Okay, I'm just, say, a week or so, maybe 2 weeks shy of 3 months from becoming 70 years old. Now, that ain't that old. And I still feel pretty good. I still have my girlish figure, more or less. I have a little hard time getting around with my aches and pains and back and legs issues, as many of you know about. It's okay. I'm still ambulatory and can work in my shop and fish from my boat and do things around the house and hang out with my kids and pretty much do things that are meaningful to me. Okay. However, I am aware that time is running out, and I'm not the only one. Lots of you are in a similar situation. I think one thing that starts to happen when you reach this age, whatever that means, this we're no longer middle age. We're kind of golden years, and we realize that more sand is in the bottom half of the hourglass than is in the top, a lot more. And those grains seem to be running faster than they used to. All right. And this could tempt us to start feeling a little bit forlorn or melancholy because we look back at our life and we think about the things that we had planned for our life, the things that when we were younger, we hoped to be able to accomplish. We hoped would be parts of our lives. And I was watching a movie once, and there was a line in there where it was an old, old black and white film, and I was kind of surfing through the channels many years ago, and I just landed on this scene where a man and a woman were reading a line out of a book, and the line got them thinking. And here was the line, that that your life is like a diary in which you need to write one story, but you write another. Let me say that again. Your life is like a diary in which you mean to write one story, but you write another. The point here is that our lives never turn out the way that we expect. We can make our plans. Life happens. Sometimes they turn out better. Lots of times they turn out worse. Most of the time it's just a mixture. Some things are better, some things are worse. There are good times and there are disappointments. And when you start getting closer to the end, I think there is a temptation for those disappointments to begin bearing down on you. I've had the temptation myself. Okay, maybe I got 15, maybe 20 years to go. That's like less than one quarter of my life left. There's still lots of things I want to do, things I want to accomplish, changes I'd like to see made. And when I say accomplish, I don't mean just write more books or build more things. There are aspects of relationships that I would like to see improve and things like that. But the time is running out on getting all these things done. I've probably played my best tennis game that I'll ever play. Actually, that was about 30 years ago. There's a whole bunch of things that I probably caught the largest bass I'm ever going to catch, or a lot of those things were in the past. And that might be occasion for melancholy, because there just isn't enough time to get done all the things I wanted to get done. Okay, so that's the challenging thought. And here's what I think in response. What I think is, wait a minute, I got lots of time ahead of me. After a fashion, I could say, wait a minute, I'm still young. And I don't mean this thing where psychologically I'm trying to think of myself as really a young man in an older man's body. That's not it. I mean, that's okay too. What I'm thinking about is I have a lot of actual time ahead of me. In fact, the time I have ahead of me is completely unlimited. There is no boundary to it because I have eternal life. So if I don't get every single thing done in this life that I thought was important for me to do in my 40 and 10, all right, nobody does. There are different dissatisfactions and disappointments and plans that never get fulfilled. That's just the way life is. But life is longer than the 40 and 10 for Christians. Well, it's longer than that for everybody, but it's longer than that in a good sense for those who know the rescuer. He's got great plans for us beyond what we can even imagine here. You know, I think about, oh, I don't want to go yet because I want to finish this project or catch that fish or do this or do that or go to this location, visit this situation. You know, our plans that aren't fulfilled yet, but what we have is coming is so much better. And by the way, it isn't sitting on the clouds strumming harps. That's boring as far as I'm concerned. No, what the scripture indicates is that there's going to be meaningful activity on a new earth where we'll live. So there's going to be lots of really satisfying things to do. I don't know, just a thought for you who are getting on a little bit and are wondering and worrying, wow, I can't get it all done in the time that I have left. Just reminding you, if you're a Christian, you've got a lot more time left than you think. You have an infinite, well, I should put it this way, you have a never-ending amount of time. You're still really young, plenty of time to do meaningful and satisfying, important things. I'm Greg Kokel. To your calls in just a moment here on Stand to Reason.
Hi, I'm Alan Schliemann. Should Christians divide over homosexuality? Or is this a topic that we can just agree to disagree on? Find out my answer in the latest episode of my podcast, Thinking Out Loud with Alan Schliemann. Look for it on iTunes or the top of the homepage at str.org.
Are you looking for a way to be more involved in the STR community? When you choose to support Stand to Reason with a monthly gift of $10 or more, you become a strategic partner in the work of equipping Christian ambassadors. Your monthly commitment makes you a part of a special group helping STR-trained Christians to graciously defend classical Christianity and classical Christian values. Your monthly gift helps us plan and manage STR's resources and provides consistent support to aid our planning and ongoing work. As a strategic partner, you'll enjoy an automatic 10% discount in our online store, access to a private Facebook group, and bi-monthly insider updates, so you'll get the inside scoop on what's going on in the ministry, and you'll know what you can pray for. Become a strategic partner in the Stand to Reason community today by visiting str.org/donate. Click How Often Will You Donate and choose Monthly. For personal assistance, you can email ocean@str.org. That's ocean@str.org.
Back at you here on Stand to Reason, Greg Kokel, your host, and taking your calls at 855, what is that, 243-9975. I have it scribbled on a post-it here since I'm not in the studio right now. We're doing the show from my office, such as it is. It's actually a bedroom that's covered with no bed, just all bookshelves and my desk and my computer, and now a little microphone right in front of me that I got today, incidentally. I needed to get it, and so we ordered it by phone from the local electronics store. What was the name of that? Best Buy, that's right. And but I couldn't go in and grab it. I had to actually drive up and roll my window down while the guy checked my ID and just handed it with plastic gloves on to me in the car. So that's the way life is at the moment. But now I've got this nice, fancy schmancy new microphone here in my office that I could use to have these shows, or rather have, yeah, do these shows from home and overcome the liabilities of this lockdown that we're experiencing now around the country. Okay, so I've got Noah in Seattle, Washington on board first. Noah, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Nice to hear your voice. I wasn't exactly sure whether this was going to work or not. And there you are.
Yeah. So you were talking a little bit about how we have a lot of time with us, right?
Some people. Yeah. Oh, you're talking about the eternity part.
No. Yeah. Well, yeah. You said that we had a lot of time to do things that are meaningful.
I see. But, okay. Well, there are two things I was talking about. But now we're talking about, yes, if we're locked down, this gives us an opportunity to knock out some things on our punch list that maybe we couldn't do before. Correct.
Yeah. I guess one of the things I'm really adamant about right now is really trying to prepare myself to go into apologetics or theology. Uh-huh. And really try to bring out the truth and reality and what others say that's not really necessarily true. And I was just wondering what your advice would be going into that or putting my life into that a little bit, because I'm already trying to write a lot. What would you say is what should be my main focus, and what would help me to be successful with this?
Sure. Okay. Well, there's a lot going on there. I'll give you two pieces of advice, and maybe three. Okay. But before I tell you the advice that I'd give you about kind of getting into apologetics, you asked a moment ago, what should be my main focus? Okay. I actually think your main focus, and this is going to sound not too profound, but your main focus ought to be Christianity. Okay. And yeah. What I mean there is if we are defenders, those who make a defense for something, that's what an apologist is, and the thing we're making defense of is Christianity, then it behooves us to continue to deepen our understanding of that which we're defending. And so the main focus should be getting Christianity right. All right? Because the challenge of Christianity, on Christianity, I should say, is not just coming from those who are kind of way on the other side of the spectrum. It's not just coming from atheists or skeptics or agnostics or people from other religious views or other philosophic views that are attacking us. The challenge is also somewhat on the inside of Christendom. Those people who have mischaracterized or misrepresented what Christianity happens to be, whether on purpose or by accident. In fact, you may not know this, but the very first apologists, really, the first century, I should say the beginning of the second century, spawned the first class of apologists, and what they were doing was defending against false teaching, principally. Gnosticism, for example, or Arianism, or modalism of some sort. These heresies that began taking root early on in the course of Christian history. So what I would say of first importance, Noah, is that you get your feet firmly grounded in classical Christianity, okay?
Okay.
And this is one of the reasons that I wrote the book, The Story of Reality. It's because it seemed to me there were so many Christians that did not have a good footing in Christianity, at least even in the very, very basics, and that's what I cover in The Story of Reality. I talk about God, and then the fall, man, and then the rescue plan, Jesus, and the means of rescue, the cross, and then the way it all works out in the final resurrection. So God, man, Jesus, cross, resurrection. Five simple points that are meant to provide a kind of structure that we then build around as we grow more in our knowledge and understanding of Christianity, okay? And then go from there. So I just want to encourage you, whether you get it from The Story of Reality or from some other book, I've often recommended a one-volume, Christian Theology is the title of it. It's just a single volume of explaining the basics of Christian theology. There's a whole bunch of systematics out there that are fairly accessible, that systematic theology, Wayne Grudem has one that's pretty accessible. The one that I mentioned, Christian Theology, is by Erickson, I think. But having something like that in your library that you can continue to go to remind yourself or educate yourself about the foundational issues of Christianity, what God is like, what is the nature of man and man's problem, who is Jesus and what did he come to do, and how did he do it, and what's the nature of the work of the cross and salvation, the atonement, that kind of thing, and then final things, and here I don't mean final things like when's Jesus coming back, you know, not eschatology in that sense, but rather final things, how things play out ultimately to the final resurrection, to either reward or judgment. I encourage you to deepen your foundation there. Okay, so that's my first piece of advice. Yeah. All right? Okay. Then, as you continue to build a good foundation in what the truth is, now it's a matter of having an impact for that truth in the lives of other people. And here's where I have two standard recommendations, Noah, and maybe you've heard this before if you've listened to the show. How long have you listened to the show?
I've recently been listening to it consistently for the past like week or two, but off and on the past 4 months.
Okay. Maybe you haven't heard me say this before. Here's the first thing. Really important. Bloom where you're planted. Bloom where you're planted. My wife used to have a little plaque over the sink by the window. It said, bloom where you're planted. Well, I like that. And it's the idea that wherever you're at, And I don't mean physical location necessarily. I mean, even in your walk with the Lord, your knowledge, your ability to communicate, whatever, whatever that is, use whatever it is that you have in the circumstance that you're in. That's what I mean by bloom where you're planted. Okay. And so you don't have to wait to get an MA in apologetics to do apologetics. You don't have to get a degree in Greek or something to teach a Bible study. When I became a Christian in 1973, I immediately began talking to people about Jesus at UCLA, where I was a student. And some people became Christians as a result. And so I invited them over to where I lived, and we would, four or five of us, would sit on the floor and open our Bibles, and I'd do a little Bible study. Now, what did I know about the Bible and theology, apologetics, and philosophy? I knew almost nothing, but I knew more than they did. So I took the little bit more that I knew than they did, and I tried to pass that on to them. And that's the basic concept here. The more that I did that, not only did the more that I became solidified in the understanding myself, because the best way to learn something is to teach other people, but also the more it helped them, and they were growing spiritually. And then more things kind of came into the mix. So as I was kind of faithful in that small thing or those small things, I was given more. The Lord sovereignly gave me more opportunities. And so that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Let's just take whatever you got and use what the opportunities that God gives you wherever they happen to be. And if you don't see anything right away, then volunteer for something. Get moving is the point. And so that's the first thing. Make sense to you?
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the second thing that I recommend. First one, bloom where you're planted. Second one, be a student of your craft. Be a student of your craft. Okay, now if you want to be an apologist, well, apologetics then is your craft. But it also entails more, because we are not just learning apologetics. We are communicating things in order to have an impact with the apologetics that we're learning. So our craft entails a knowledge base, which I referred to a little bit ago, talking about the foundations of Christianity. But it also refers to knowledge pertaining to basic issues of apologetics. And maybe we'll talk about some of those in just a moment if you have particular questions about where to start. I'm just speaking generally now. So you have a knowledge base that is part of your craft, but you also have a skill set that needs to be developed, okay? So how do people usually express apologetics? Generally, one of two ways, either talking or writing, okay? So there's a communication element that's involved. And did you say that you're starting to do a blog? I wasn't sure if that you mentioned that or not. Did you say something like that?
I started doing a podcast a bit ago about sort of my journey in growing and learning through this. And then I started writing something, because I want to do sort of like a book on a couple different things and stuff like that.
Okay, well, that's great. And you are in a golden age right now where there are lots of opportunities for people to engage in a way that was never the case 20 or 30 years ago. So now there are podcasts. Everybody can be a radio talk show host after a fashion. There are or TV host on a video cast, right? There are blogs. So everybody can be a writer, even if they don't have a publisher. Now, you may not have much of an audience at first. That's okay. It's not expensive to get in there and start practicing your craft and expressing your ideas through writing or through speaking. And so that's a great place to start. But one of the things that we do, even at Stand to Reason, is we are constantly trying to improve our craft. And so I'll just tell you quite candidly, one of our team members sent me a piece that he wrote, like a 800 word peace that sending out to his people and also using for a podcast. And he had asked me about some of the theology about it earlier. And so I talked to him about it. Then he wrote a piece and he sent the piece to me. Well, I went and I redlined a bunch of it. In other words, I edited it out in a way that he could see the changes I made and why I made the changes I did by looking at it. He could see that so that he could be a better writer in the future. So even with our experienced writers and our experienced speakers, we're in the process of having a give and take review, training, mentoring, discipleship to help them be more effective communicators. Even though, you know, they've got a following, even though they've got they're on the big stage sometimes, we still want to improve in our ability. We want to be students of our craft. So those are the I'm interested if you have any questions about that, I'd be glad to answer. But those are the two main things is blooming where you're planted and being a student of your craft. And you'll find, just like Proverbs said, you find a man skilled in his work, and he will stand before kings. Point being, your preparation and your hard work will often make a place for you to express it as time goes on.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, definitely. Since earlier I started trying to, since I want to start sharing the gospel now with people, and I know I can. But
well, there's no reason you can't. This is a great time. I started sharing Christ immediately.
Yeah.
I became a Christian on September 28th, 1973. It was a Friday night. And 24 hours later, I was in a pitched battle with my best friend who was shocked that I was a Christian and a couple other people in the group. I mean, I was trying to be nice about it, but they were really mad at me. I wasn't even 24 hours old in the Lord, and there I was witnessing. Now, did I do a really good job? No, I wouldn't say I did a really good job, but I was blooming where I was planted at that moment. So I would encourage you to get involved in conversations. That's going to be one of the best learning experiences you can have.
Since the way I sort of started doing that was today and yesterday, since I play a lot of games on Xbox, and I started gaining conversations during the games with people about Christ or sort of their thoughts on different ideas. I don't know whether you think that's a bad idea or a good idea.
No, it's not. It's a great idea. It's blooming where you're planted is precisely the point. And you're going to stumble around and make a lot of mistakes like I did, and I still do 47 years later. But that's just the way it always works out. So I encourage you to engage people like that. And what you're going to find out, Noah, is you're going to find out what the questions are that people are asking, what the objections are that they're raising, and what they offer in exchange, in place of Christianity. And see, this is a real important point. I call it like, what's the alternative? Okay, so you're not going to believe in Christianity. You think that's dumb. Okay, I get that. So what you believe instead is what? All right?
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm waiting for them to tell me, because there is, in a certain sense, no neutral ground. They reject one thing because they believe in something else, and I want to hear what it is that they believe in. Are you familiar with the tactical game plan at all, Noah?
Yeah.
Okay,
I've read most of your book.
Okay, super. Well, that contains some of the best advice I could give you at this point. If you're out there mixing it up, just like you're doing, asking a lot of questions, that's going to give you, I think, the best opportunity and best results for the level you're at, okay? It's going to give you, if you don't know how to witness in a sophisticated way, and not that I don't know that that's even important, but a lot of people feel they're just not up to the task, okay, then ask questions. And by asking questions, the way I describe in the book, then you're going to get more information. You're going to get education. You're going to be involved in a process of relationship with that person and friendly conversation. You'll be amazed at what the Lord's going to do.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Glad to help out. Let's go to break right now, and then I've got some more thoughts I'm going to share here on Stand to Reason. Back in just a moment. Stay with us.
You can connect with STR on social media to keep up to date on all the latest, including articles, videos, events, and giveaways. You'll easily find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Interact with STR staff, post comments, get involved with other like-minded Christians, weigh in by responding to some of the issues of the day, and see what's going on behind the scenes. Social media is your gateway to all the latest from STR, including speaking events, new podcasts, resources, articles, and what's on our mind today. Follow STR online and find all our social media platforms when you visit str.org and click Connect at the bottom of the page.
You can take Stand to Reason with you through our mobile apps, available for free from the App Store or the Google Play Store. The Quick Reference app gives you short, easily accessible courses on our most popular topics like tactics, homosexuality in the Bible, morality, the story of reality, and many more. The Stand to Reason app has all our latest content available at your fingertips. You can listen to our podcasts, check the blog, and access timely and practical resources. They're free, so download the apps today on the App Store or the Google Play Store and start carrying Stand to Reason with you everywhere you go. If you enjoy our apps, you can help other people find them by rating them on the App Store or the Google Play Store.
All right, friends, Greg Kokel here, and final segment of our show. I actually don't have any callers on right now, but I do have some things I want to talk about. Just a reminder, though, in light of the fact that for a while, at least, I'll be doing the show from home. I don't see the boards and not sure what's going on. I just know I don't have it right now. I got Derek. He's my faithful guy. I can actually see his handsome face here on our Skype connection, but there he is. Many of you in the past have not been able to call in just because you're out and about, and it may be that you're not out and about now very much, and this is a perfect opportunity to call in the show, 855-243-9975, to call in during our show times. So that would be 4 to 6 p.m. Los Angeles time. So that's West Coast. 4 to 6 p.m. I'll be glad to take your calls and questions or comments. If you disagree with something, fine. If you have something you want to work through, fine. My only rule here, and this has been the case for 30th year or 31st year. I lose track. More than three decades of the radio, is that you give me a piece of your mind and I will give you a piece of mind. Okay, that's what I have in mind. 1-888-253-9975 is the number. About a month ago, I was involved with Ravi Zacharias International Ministry. They'd asked me to be kind of their guest, Bible Answer Man or something. I don't know what to call it. It wasn't exactly that, but their best guest answer person. So for that week, there were people that would post questions online, and then I would write responses to them and post them online. Maybe some of you saw some of those interchanges, and I think some of them since then we posted on our blog. But I have a couple of those here that I wanted to share with you that I think you might be interested in here in our last 15 minutes or so of the show. This question is about an agnostic, a person who has a friend who is an agnostic, who is convinced that we can't know what happens when we die. That is, we can't know in advance what happens when we die. We'll know when we die, but we can't know before that. That kind of knowledge is not to be had. So they've had many conversations together here, but the line he keeps using is the same thing. You can't know. And says he takes comfort in not knowing. Then asked me how I would respond. Maybe how could I put a stone in his shoe? Well, first of all, I don't know why it would be comfortable not knowing. To me, that's like not thinking you might be sick, but you're not sure if you're sick. But maybe you are sick, and maybe the sickness you have is really bad, but you're not sure. But that's okay. because you don't know for sure. And you're not going to go to the doctor to find out because he might give you some bad news. I mean, just because you don't know doesn't mean it won't be bad when it happens. So that always strikes me as a little bit unusual. But my basic question of an agnostic who makes that kind of statement would be, why are you convinced that you can't know what happens when we die until we die? What gives you that confidence that, I should say confidence, that an answer is not within reach here? And what he says next is going to dictate where we go in that conversation. Now, it may turn out that he's convinced we can't know anything unless science confirms it. So that's a point of view that's very popular today. It's called scientism. It's the idea that only science gives us truth about the world. There are a number of problems with this view. I've talked about it before. I've written about it. For one, it's self-refuting because the statement itself, we can't know anything unless science confirms it. That's the view. Well, that statement itself is a statement held to be true by those who believe it, yet cannot itself be confirmed by science. How do they know that? So it commits kind of a suicide, to use the language of tactics, because it cannot fulfill its own demand for legitimacy. And this brings me to the second point. The first one is, this is self-refuting, taken at face value, if that's the agnostic's complaint. And secondly, it just turns out there are a host of things that we know to be true by means other than science. And in fact, if we don't know certain things to be true other than by science, we'd be dead in a day, okay? And in fact, science itself can't even work unless we know a bunch of things that need to be true before science can weigh in on them. For example, the truth of the basic reliability of our senses, the truth of reason and logic, the truth of inference, the truth of cause and effect, the truth of the uniformity of causes in a natural world, all those kinds of things. You got to have all of those things in place before science can even start working. So an agnostic who is dismissive of our knowledge about life after death because science can't tell him about that has backed himself into a corner. There's all kinds of things that we know that science cannot weigh in on, and science itself can't confirm that particular claim. So one last thing here is that it turns out, ironically, science has weighed in fact, on these issues in a certain sense. And that is the massive amount of scientific research that's been done regarding what are called near-death experiences, or NDEs. And I don't mean here just the popular bestsellers you can find at a rack at the drugstore. Okay, I mean serious, peer-reviewed scientific analyses that end up lending a tremendous amount of evidential credibility to the idea that our souls are separate from our bodies and can actually be in other physical locations, and it appears also in a non-physical dimension in a way that can actually be tested. Now, these are characteristically called not just out-of-body experiences, but remote viewing experiences would be the most kind of official way of putting it. And that means that a person can have a near-death experience and their body is laying, say, on the operating table, but their self-awareness, their soul, leaves that location and they are actually aware of themselves in a different location where they can observe a unique set of events. And that location could be down the hallway or it could be across town. And then return, in a sense, to their body. And when they wake up, can report the details of those specific events in a way that they can be tested to find out whether they got it right or not. And it turns out there are dozens and dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of examples when they did get it right. Okay. Now, if you want more information on this kind of thing, I recommend a book like Beyond Death, Exploring the Evidence for Immortality. Philosophers J.P. Moreland and Gary Habermas, who many of you know or are aware of, wrote that book. And there's, I think Gary is the one who did the work on near-death experiences and all the details on remote viewing. So there's a lot of information that's out there that I think gives us good reason to believe that we can have some reason to believe something particular happens when we die. Now, I know that in a certain sense, this doubt that was raised by the agnostic it doesn't quite fit the remote viewing category, but what remote viewing demonstrates is that there's something more to us than just our physical body. And scientific evidence is adequate to show that, these near-death experiences being the example. Now, does that tell us what happens when we die, when we go on the other side? Well, there are examples of that in NDEs that some people find incredible and don't take seriously. Okay, but doesn't it at least open up the possibility that we can know something like that, given the reality and the credibility and the evidential quality of bona fide near-death experiences where there are out-of-body experiences and experiences of remote viewing? Okay, so those are all things I think that relate well to the question of the agnostic, and that's the kind of thing that I would bring up. And by the way, I'd ask the agnostic, okay, how do you explain this information? Okay, how do you account for the experiences of remote viewing and that kind of stuff? And see what he says. The key thing here when you're talking with an agnostic is you want to, on anything, is you want to have dialogue and you want to get their reasons why. Some agnostics don't think you can know anything about religion. Okay, good. Why do you say that? You can't. Some agnostics don't think you can know anything about anything. You can't be sure about anything. But the problem there is they're usually kind of sure about that. So there are different wrinkles to this issue. Anyway, just a thought, something to get you going. I think I'll call it a day here for the show. We just got a few minutes left, so let's just wind it out. It's good talking with you about these things, and I thank you for the calls. And be well. Find something productive to do. And remember, at Stand to Reason, we're working hard, and we are here for you. So give us a call, and enjoy the show. Enjoy our products, and God keep you. Give them heaven. Bye-bye.